This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Patricia W. Fisher with Readers Entertainment Radio. It is Thursday, which is one of my favorite days of the week, right after Hugh's Day. And I have the great fortune of seeing Hugh Jackman in concert last week. So I believe he's touring Mexico right now. So if you're listening, Hugh Jackman, you always have an open invitation to come on the radio show, as does Chris Hemsworth, because we always celebrate Thor's Day. And one of my very favorite authors that also is a big celebrator of Thor's Day is talking to us today. Sasha Summers grew up surrounded by books. Her passions have always been storytelling, romance, and travel passions. She's written more than 20 novellas and novels. Now a best-selling and award-winning author, Sasha continues to fall a little in love with each hero she writes. And she writes some very swoon-worthy heroes. From easy on the eyes cowboys, sexy alpha male werewolves, to heroes of truly tragic and mythic proportions, she believes that everyone should have their happily ever after ending in fiction and in real life. She has a very obstinate and grumpy, fabulous cat named Gerard, who just showed up one day. And she looks forward to hearing from fans, and her links are on the write-up of the show for Facebook, Twitter, and her website. So thank you so much for coming today, Miss Sasha. How are you?
I am good. Thank you for having me. But we have to go back. I need to hear details about your Hugh Jackman experience, because I did not get to go.
So I don't know what I was expecting. I mean, you know, he's every interview I've seen of him and, you know, the movies I've seen him in, I've always liked. And I really liked him as a person when I would see the interviews. Like, one of them they did, he was talking about his dad and, you know, how much he respects his father. And, I mean, he's just, and his wife, he's like completely bananas over her and the kids.
Right.
So I wasn't really sure what to expect. And then he came out and basically did like this variety show type thing where he sang stuff from The Greatest Showman, and then he had these amazing dancers on there, this live orchestra, you know, this live orchestra.
Wow.
And then he also did stuff from The Man from Oz. He did that. And Keila from, is that how you know your surname? From The Greatest Showman. She came out and sang This Is Me, which was like bone chilling.
That's so cool.
It was so fabulous.
Yeah.
But she was so adorable because she came out, we're all staring at her and, you know, the screen and on stage. And my friend Sarah got these tremendous tickets. So thank you, Sarah. Keila wasn't wearing any shoes on stage.
Oh, how funny.
So she had this, yeah, I know, she had this beautifully sparkly jumpsuit. And she looked gorgeous. She always does. And then but she had no shoes. I don't know.
Well,
I don't
know.
Maybe.
I guess making a statement. Interesting.
Right. It was wonderful. So of course everyone
was
singing along
and
crying and
yes. And I've seen pictures everywhere on social media since he started the tour, but yes, I just didn't know if it lived up to the hype, you know.
It really did, you know, and it's one of those things that sometimes you go because, I mean, obviously you like the person and, you know, you like everyone thing they're in, but it really was just a very, almost like putting his heart on the stage type, you know, performance.
Yay!
And you could tell he really enjoyed the evening, or he's just like this phenomenal actor that we're all just going, oh my gosh, he's fabulous. But, you know, but I think the best part, and we have a mutual friend who, Jolene Navarro, who's a wonderful author, but she is completely Hugh obsessed. Like, she totally loves her husband, but I have no doubt that Hugh's on the free pass list. So he made the entire free pass if she would ever do that, but she wouldn't. But the whole thing is that they went to see Hugh in Houston, right? And then they saw him here in San Antonio. And we were laughing because they had posted the day before that Hugh always had this huge crush on Olivia Newton-John growing up. And so apparently that was part of the show when he talked to the audience in Houston. Well, they printed up a picture of Olivia Newton-John.
Oh, my gosh.
Like from Greece, I guess. And they were sitting second row, and they were holding the sign up, and he saw it. So
funny.
He's laughing, and I know. Well, the best part is Jolene's husband, Fred, had the sign, and Hugh calls Fred up to the stage, like not on the stage, but to the stage.
Right.
And all of us, there's like 12 of us scattered through the, you know, AT&T Center going, oh my gosh, that's Fred. And and Fred's just talking to Hugh Jackman like it's just, oh yeah, you know, they're like at the grocery store.
Yeah.
They met in the bread aisle or something. Like it's nothing.
Fred is so chill. He's such a sweetie.
Oh my gosh. He's so chill. But the funniest thing was Hugh goes, where's your wife? And Fred just got casually turns around and points to Jolene, and you just saw her like sink. Like you could see her head just fall. And she just wanted to shrink. And it was just, I guess it was one of those, it's one of those wonderful moments, you know?
Right.
That
right.
we all look forward to. Okay. We'll all be talking about when we're 90.
Oh,
it was such a great show.
Well, good.
But that moment
I'm
was
so
the price
glad.
Of the, worth the price of the ticket. Yeah.
Oh, sure. I'm sure. I am proud of her for not fainting, let's be honest, because she's that big a fan of those.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, and the best part is, just like the writer I am, I'm sitting there watching the show going, I could so write a hero like that. Yep, it's done.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like you're writing the story,
Batman,
as you're watching the show.
Yes, he is pure hero material from his stage persona to his personal life. He's just such a great guy. So, well, yay, I'm glad it didn't disappoint. I'm glad
yay.
It was a wonderful evening. That's always good.
It was. It really was. It was a lot of fun.
Good.
So, yeah, and we lucked out because it, like, torrentially rained during the show and then stopped right as we were leaving, which was great because I had gotten a poster.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, that's nice. I'm going to walk out in the rain poster.
Going to get
one of my 12.
Squishy.
I'm like, well, I'm 12. Yep, I am 12. I'm going to get a poster. Put it right next to my Donnie and Marie poster that I got at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo when I was like 8.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Those little memories.
Yes.
Little nuggets.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
And speaking of those kind of little nuggets, that's one of the things that I really love about your books, because you have this wonderful sense of family and the sense of putting different little stories together. So, like, these little quirks and moments that you put in that you, as a reader, you're saying, oh, yeah, that sounds familiar, whatever. Are you pulling some of those from your personal life or just things you've kind of collected over the years, or what is that for you?
Okay, so I'm going to be honest, and this is just going to make me sound crazy, but honestly, when I'm writing, and I think we've talked about this before as authors, I think when you're in it, your characters kind of naturally lead you, or at least they do for me. So, you know, when I go into it, I might have an idea of their personality, but the more you write, the more it comes out, and they kind of, I know it's me, I know I'm doing it, but they seem to develop their own little idiosyncrasies and quirks that make them individual characters. Because after you've written a couple of books, you want to make sure that they're distinctive characters. You don't want to write the same character over and over again. So you definitely want to be aware of it, but they've all been very easy to get along with and write.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel very happy to think that, you know, you find them relatable, because that's obviously the goal. You know, you're not going to read it if you don't care about the people. So, yay!
Yay! Well, and speaking of that, you have this new series from Last Stand Texas with Too Late Publishing, who we both write for and we both absolutely adore.
Yes.
So tell me about book one that came out not too long ago, and now book two's come out.
Yes. So book one was Sweet on the Cowboy. And basically, it's the Drager family, and they're a big Texas cowboy family. They own a ranch, but they're breeding rodeo stock. So it's a little different, but, you know, they still run cattle and everything. And in the first book, it's the oldest brother, Lamb, and the father, the patriarch, has just passed, and so he's kind of taking on the mantle. And so he's having to deal with that. And then this woman shows up in his kitchen in the middle of the night, and she's cooking and like listening to jazz band really, really loudly. And she's very quirky, and she kind of does the whole 1940s retro style hair and clothing. And he's just kind of confused. But it turns out she's supposed to be there. So, and they, you know, over time fall in love, and she has adorable little twins. And it's just a really great intro to this family. And then the one that just came out, it's called Christmas Flowers, and it's the second one, and it's about Macon, who is Lamb's brother. And this is my first ever sweet story, like full-on sweet, and it was so much fun. You know, when I was writing it, I was thinking, okay, I'm going to go with the whole Hallmark movie vibe, that just really sweet, really kind of feel, you know. I think especially around the holidays,
sure,
we all love that extra warm, fuzzy feeling. So this one, they're high school sweeties that are getting a second chance around the holiday season. And she has come to run her grandmother's flower shop because the grandma's finally taking this European cruise she's wanted to take her whole life. So Charlotte, who's the heroine, she's come in to take over. And because she's this very high energy kind of can't sit still girl, she decides to transform her little flower shop into a flower cafe, which is this like over the top, flowers everywhere, you know, with lots of senses and just a real kind of relaxing oasis kind of idea. But the building is so old that in the process, she gets some phone calls to the city about breaking city ordinances. And so the fire marshal has to come in. And guess who's the fire marshal? So it's pretty cute.
Oh, my.
So the ex is coming in having to write her citations and at the same time wanting to help her out because even after all those years, he just wants to make her happy. So they're super cute and sweet, and there's puppies and kittens and Christmas caroling and making cookies and just all sorts of good stuff.
Oh, how fun. And are
you
going to be able to, what kind of cookies do you have them making?
I have them making, and it was really cool. I never made them before, but you know, my twins are like 3 and 4, so they're kind of messy. And there's this cookie called a monster cookie. Have you ever heard of it?
Oh yeah, where you dump everything in?
Yes.
Like all
like,
sorts
okay,
of everything,
like,
yeah.
Yes. And this is exactly what kids that age would want to do because they don't have to be pretty. So and Charlotte is not a chef at all. So for her this is like, oh thank goodness, there's no pressure. So they put in everything from like, you know, Red Hots to peppermints to red and green chocolate covered like M&Ms, that kind of stuff. And they just, and pretzels and Rice Krispies even, I think. So you go crazy with it. But I might actually have to try and make them this year just to see how they turn out. But so they definitely make it. I mean, they make gingerbread too, but this is my first like, this is new and unique and kids would obviously love this. So yes.
Oh, for sure, if they're not eating the candy in the process.
Exactly. Oh, I'm sure they'll do plenty of that, too. Yes. Yeah, but that's one of the things. I'm getting to go to an author tea in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to be putting that recipe card in with my little giveaway bag. So, so the readers can go home and make a mess themselves and, you know, just eat all the candy if they don't want to actually make the cookies. So.
Sure. Well, it's kind of like, you know, my husband he did not grow up in a eating raw cookie dough house, which I feel bad for that, you know?
I know.
Because there's just, So, and I remember the very first time I made cookies with our children and he walked in and they were licking the beaters and he said, what are you doing? And I said, we're eating cookie dough. And he said, you can't eat raw cookie dough. I said, yeah, you can. I've been doing it for like, I don't know, 30 plus years.
Watch me.
No, you can't. But I mean, don't you remember doing that with your grandma? Like she'd make cake batter. She'd make, whatever.
Yes.
And it was just one of those moments, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like you have, what is it? My kids always like to say, I just need to make sure it's not poisoned, mom. But yeah, totally. They've got to have a, you know, a lick of it or whatever. So, I mean, I remember with my sisters, we would fight over who got the beater, you know, it was like after you were done mixing everything up.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. So yeah, my oldest sister normally won because she was a lot taller than me. So, but you know, I don't have deep scars or anything. I've recovered.
Yeah, now it's, you know, you dip the spoon, you can dip the spoon in or whatever because, you know, we have one of those stand on the thing mixers that you throw everything in.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, yeah, I mean, the beaters, we just mentioned that, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Because my grandmother would make cake batter, brownies or whatever. One of the funniest recipes I remember was my great grandmother would make these amazing mashed potatoes and she would babysit me a lot when my parents were working. And So she'd make these incredible, and my mom was like, what is she putting in these mashed potatoes? I mean, she tried everything to make things taste like that. And my great-grandmother wasn't sharing the recipe because she was like, no, I'm not sharing. And so my mom sent me in, like, stealthy and said, what is she doing? What's these mashed potatoes?
Oh, my God.
And I remember when she had really bad arthritis, my great-grandmother couldn't hold the mixer very well, like the handheld
right.
mixer. So she started mashing it, like she'd boil the snot out of these potatoes. And
right.
then she would mash them with a glass.
Oh.
Instead, like she'd take a glass and mash them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I remember saying, well, I don't know. She like uses a glass. And so I remember my mom in there like making mashed potatoes, like smashing them with a glass. And she's like, this isn't working. And it was Hellman's mayonnaise.
Oh.
She was, my great grandma was using Hellman's mayonnaise. She's, but she used it on as much stuff as she could. So to me, it was like, well, yeah, she always used Hellman's. But that was the secret ingredient, was Hellman's mayonnaise.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. It would give
yeah.
it a little dip and the creamy texture. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I never would have thought
so
of that.
So when I first started making mashed potatoes, you know, Steve's, my husband's family's got a cholesterol issues. And I'm like, he's like, no, not mashed, you know, no. Hey. Man, no cookie dough, no mayonnaise. What's wrong? Who am I married to?
It's very sad. I'm very sad for him.
I know. It's just not right.
Oh.
Yeah, but, you know, you adjust. We all do. So,
yeah.
So
yeah.
You've got these two books coming. Do you have more in the series?
I do. I actually just signed today book three of the contract for that. So I'm super excited. And it's Colton, who is the ladies' man of the group. You meet him in the first book, and he definitely lays it on thick. So he's
okay.
going to kind of get brought low by this heroine, and it is a super sweet story, so but not quite as sweet as this one. I'm not sure I
okay.
will continue to write super super sweet, but yeah, no, I think they're just a great family, and I want to definitely make sure that the brothers have their story. And after that, who knows, you know, as you write along, other characters will come along, and you're like, okay, they have to have a happy ending. You know how that is. So we'll see what happens. There is a sister too. So maybe
okay.
she'll get her back. Who knows?
Yeah. But so, I mean, the feedback you're getting so far, are you having people say, oh, and I can't wait for this story? And you're going, well, I hadn't planned on writing that one, but sure, you know?
I think everybody knew that Colton was coming out next, because that's been kind of the thing. Oh, it's his next. I'm like, yeah. So yes, definitely. So I don't know after that. I've only had one person ask, the sister's name is Tabitha, but she goes by Tabby. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how it goes. And if she's somebody that, you know, needs her own book. I try to take it one book at a time at this point, just so that there's not all that pressure. Because
sure.
I think when you start, as soon as you start putting pressure on yourself, sometimes it makes it harder to just be in the book, if that makes sense. So I just
right.
try and enjoy each book and each journey without getting too bogged down. Because, you know, it translates on the page. So definitely.
Right. Because you've written in multiple genres. I mean, you've got,
yes.
You know, more saucy. You've got,
yes.
you know, paranormal. You've
yes.
done stuff with a little bit of mythology. You've done stuff with a little bit of
yes.
romantic suspense. And you
yes.
know, you've got all this. And so how do you, I mean, do you write one book at a time? Do you write one and plot another? How do you keep everybody organized?
Well, I actually have a kind of wide cornucopia of things. It seems to kind of do different things for different books, but I do everything from, if it's going to be a big family series, then I will actually buy a family tree book and fill it in with all of the characters, because, it, you know, everything from their little eye color to what they might be allergic to, just so that I do keep all of that information straight. To sometimes I'll do like a what they call a story Bible, which is me printing off different worksheets that I want to fill out and the character inspiration and just putting it in a binder. And other times I'll do a storyboard, which you can plot your book, but I tend to also put pictures and stuff on it. So each book, it depends on how if I need something new, then I'm not going to do what I did for the last book, if that makes sense, to get started with it. But
right.
I do have to keep, I mean, I've even been as mundane as doing an Excel spreadsheet, and I have to tell you, that's my least favorite way to do it. but it does help you keep it organized. So, you know, I like to add in as much creativity because I think it keeps your brain firing in a different way when you're actually getting up and doing things and creating and visualizing and really putting yourself in the place. It's really book by book, series by series. It all has kind of taken on its own shape. But music is always really, really important when I start a series. I actually come up with a playlist that I can consistently listen to for the series because it also kind of grounds me and helps me remember the tone and the mood and the setting. So I rely a lot on music.
So, and you have lists on Spotify for that, right?
I don't on Spotify. I need to. I'm still really antiquated and I'm just on YouTube. But now that they're doing ads all the time, it drives me bonkers. So I really do need to go over to Spotify. I don't know. Someone needs to hook me up with that because I'm still kind of antiquated myself.
I would be willing to bet we could probably find someone to help you with that.
I hope so.
And I wouldn't mind a lesson on it either because I know that there's a lot of authors that use like their mood. So here's my book I'm writing and here's
exactly
the mood. So yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just
and
that
it's
little
fun
glimpse
to
can
hear.
Get people excited. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Do you,
definitely.
What about Pinterest? Do you use Pinterest boards?
Oh yes, definitely. This point, all of my series in the beginning, I had individual book ones. Now I've got some that are just overall series because there's so many of them that I feel like it would be obnoxious to have a book for every one of them. But, I have to say one of the biggest compliments for me, because I am such a visual person, is when a fan makes a board off of your book. That is so amazing. It's just like, it's like, oh my gosh, it's like awesome. It's happened a couple of times and it's so cool to see how, something you've written, how different they would envision kind of your characters, but how, they took the time to try to record their thoughts and ideas and people that they would put in. And it's just so cool. I think it's the biggest compliment ever.
Oh, for sure. Especially if you, and then they're telling hundreds, thousands of people that there's a book you should read. And so much so that I've made a message board for it.
Exactly. I was like, whoa. Oh, and here's a shameless plug because I just found out about this. Being that it's Halloween, my werewolf books are on sale. So you were telling me writing across the genres. Yeah, they're going to do a big Halloween sale over at that publishing house. So if you're in the mood for hunky werewolves, those guys are going to be on sale. I'm just saying that could be fun for Halloween.
Be the format to give that news for sure.
Yes.
So where do people go if they want
Amazon?
Books?
Amazon or Barnes and Noble.
Just go to Amazon.
Yes, definitely. And it's the Blood Moon Brotherhood, and it's super. Whereas this is super sweet, kind of go to the other end of the spectrum. Whereas this one has no naughty words or obscenities. These have all sorts of salty words sprinkled throughout. So it's
colorful,
the other end of the spectrum.
Colorful adjectives.
Right there.
A lot of colorful adjectives.
What is it they say on SpongeBob? Sentence enhancers? There you go. So, yes, lots of those.
Sentence enhancers. Yes.
But, they're werewolves.
Star Trek, so, it was called, I think it was called Colorful Metaphors.
Oh, I like that.
One
That's
time.
Good.
I think it was in Star Trek or something, yeah. So,
yeah.
But
werewolves are not going to be, like, polite and mannerly. That would actually be kind of a fun way to go with it. I'm not sure I've ever read a sweet werewolf paranormal.
Oh my gosh.
Does that even exist?
I think that would
be
hard to write.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, no. I think it would be difficult.
Against,
Yeah.
And let's be honest, a werewolf, it's like they're just pure animal. So those were fun to
And
write
that's
too.
One of the reasons we like them. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the reasons I like to write all over the place. It can be hard sometimes because, as we know, getting out there, if someone's reading your werewolf stuff and then they reach over and they pick up something that's completely different, it can kind of be like, oh, but it's kind of like the whole plotting process. I like to do different things. And so that's what I do, write all over the place. And it's fun. It keeps you fresh, I think, when you are not stuck in a rut.
Sure. I mean, so what made you want to make this more of a sweet series versus a saucy series?
Well, I had been, you know, I think we're all in a place right now where it just seems like as a whole, I'm not going to get political. It just seems like there's a lot of angst in real life right now. And so the idea of having a super, I don't want to say shallow, but the angst in this book is not significant enough to make anybody actually get stressed out. There's this comfort in it.
Sure.
You know, it's going to be okay. And I think we all at this point, or at least I know I do. I just want that feeling. I want the feeling that it's going to be good. Everything's happy, that, you know, we all have our own problems, but at the end of the day, we can find something that just gives us that little warm fuzzy that sometimes right now it's hard to find. So that was kind of the goal,
right?
Was to make it so just sweet and carefree and light that it was a nice little break from the day to day.
From reality. I mean, I think we all need to step away every once in a while.
Exactly.
I think it's good to be aware and educated and know what's going on, but there are times, you know, we really do need to just go, I have to step away from this for even if it's for half a day.
Exactly.
Because
exactly. And I totally agree with you about staying on top of things, though. We have to, as adults, as citizens of the Americas, we have to make sure that we are being informed and staying on top of stuff and being active citizens. But yeah, it's equally important to have an ice cream and read a good book and cuddle with our dog or our kitty and chill out. So yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. And so you just mentioned cats. So I, you know, and I know the story, but tell me how, so you post a lot about this lovely, such a cuddly creature.
Oh yeah.
Sarcasm. That arrived at your house. Yes.
He did.
He arrived at your
house.
He
did. Mm-hmm.
How long ago was he show
gosh,
up?
It's been 7 years now. It was Christmas
Eve. Wow, really?
Eve, and
okay.
Yeah, it was Christmas Eve, and my husband and I, you know, we were doing the whole trying to sneak around, obviously not successfully, and get stuff ready for the next morning. And we were about to go upstairs, and you could hear this little mew right outside our front door. And the one thing in the entire universe my husband is allergic to are cats. So he heard the meowing, and he's like, oh, you need to go upstairs. Hurry, hurry. And he's trying to get me to go upstairs. And I'm like, I can hear it. You know, I'm not deaf. Well, not only did I
hear it,
but our second child, who is a cat fanatic, Emma, came out. And she's like, oh, what is that? And so I open the front door, and there's this adorable little orange and white tabby just yowling for his life. I mean, just beautiful. He comes inside and he goes upstairs with Emma and he spends the night with Emma. And the husband said, well, as long as you know, you guys take care of it, that's fine. But, you know, I'm not going to. I have pictures that show you otherwise. But anyways,
sure.
So he came up spent the night and that was it. And Gerard is now Gerard the feline overlord because he is a menace to society.
Yeah.
He has no idea that he's a cat. He will take on anything from a German shepherd to a raccoon. And he doesn't seem to realize that, yeah, he's not in the big bad guy that he thinks he is. But when he is affectionate, which is like, you know, maybe 10 minutes a day, he gives the greatest cuddles and he will climb in your lap and you pet him long enough just to get covered with white and orange hair and then he's done with you. So, I think he thinks he's the guard dog, if you will. So, yeah.
So is he going to make it into any of your books?
Well, so just because I've been thinking about, you know, adding more things to my brain, I actually have a children's book idea for him. But I don't know if I'm ever going to have the time to do it or not. But he is adorable, and he's got such a personality. And I love to draw and paint. So I'm going to think about it. It's definitely not something that will be front and center, but I could, I mean, I would want it to be something that would be, do you remember the Carl books with the large Rottweiler? And they're old. I mean,
yes,
it was.
Yes.
Okay. So it was like a storybook that told a story without words. Yes. Yes. So I could see doing something similar to that for Gerard, but I'm not sure he would have the manners to actually be a good children's book. We'll just have to see. We'll have to see.
Right. Well, you know, he's kind of quirky, and he does things on his own terms, and he has a certain way of looking at the world. And and it's funny because years ago, my husband's a pediatrician, which you know, and he said he found this book called All Cats Have Asperger's. And so it's about trying to get people who don't quite understand what that means, whether you have a family member or someone at work or whatever, this is how the people with Asperger's may perceive the world. So this is why they act the way they do, why they react to certain things. And so he has all these really great cat photos, the author, and it says, you know, if a cat, you know, kind of acts like this, it's because this is how, and it's all these different things. So it, actually, I thought of that book when you were talking about doing stuff with Gerard, that he's affectionate 10 minutes a day. So it's kind of funny to think about, you know, well, maybe, yeah, that he has his own way of looking at the world, and, you know, not everybody gets along with it, maybe not everybody,
right.
You know, it's just kind of that process of, you know, maybe he's just a grumpy cat, like we've joked about.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe he just, this is the way he sees the world, and that's okay. You know,
I
that's
like
his
that.
Way.
I like that. I like that stance on things. That's a good one. Okay.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. Yeah. Because you have nothing else you're doing.
I know. But he is worthy. He's adorable and obnoxious, but, you know.
Why not? Well, and see, here's the thing. I know that you don't have anything else that you're doing because you have something coming up after the first of the year.
I do. Yes, I do. I have a couple of things.
So
you
do.
So yeah. Yeah.
Can you talk about it?
No, yes, I would love to. I have, they're I guess what you would call big books. I'm super excited. They'll be everywhere, Walmart, Target. And the first one is, it's a new series for me. It's a little different than what I ever do, but I'm so excited about it. These characters are just really vivid. And it's kind of like if you took maybe the TV show Nashville with a little bit of Dynasty. So it's very high drama, high stakes. But each of the books actually will be dealing with kind of a ripped from the headlines topic. So the first book comes out in March, which is right around the time that sexual abuse is, it's like one of their survivors months. So we'll be tying in because there is an underlying storyline in that book. So, you know, there will be probably some flag alerts on it just in case anybody is uncomfortable with that kind of thing. It's not graphic, but they just don't want anyone to be surprised by the fact that it's
trigger
about.
Warnings. Sure.
Exactly. But it's, they're a big country music family. They're kind of legendary. I kind of think of the father as a mix between Tim McGraw and George Strait. Woohoo. He's raised, he's raised his twin girls and the son, and they have been the three kings, because there's three of them, since they were teens. And now they're young adults, and they're struggling to kind of become adults as this, what was kind of this young, you know, musical phenom.
Oh my gosh.
So they're kind of coming into their own, and now that they are adults, it's like things that everyone didn't want to talk about because they were kids is starting to come out too. So it's a really big balance of really awesome family connection and dynamic. I've had to write some songs for it, so that's been kind of fun. I have someone who's going to actually write music for it, so I would love to see those songs made into something. We'll see what happens. But so that's a great family. And the first book is Jace, and he's the hero in the first one. And he's kind of this guy that won almost like The Voice and the record company. So he wins, you know, the year contract with the record company. And it's the same record company that handles the Kings. So they arrange for him to do a single with one of the girls. So that's the way he kind of is introduced to the family. And it's a lot of fun. So that comes out in March. And then I have another book coming out in May, another new series, and it's kind of the exact opposite. It's my first women's fiction. It's multi-generational. I love it. The family is very real to me. There might be a little bit of stuff taken from my actual family, just because I think when you write something like that, you do tend to look at your own family. And that's called Accidentally Family. Yeah. And so that one will be out in May. And right now we don't even have a cover up. I've seen it and it's amazing, but they haven't done a cover reveal yet. So I can't wait. So both of those are coming out.
Oh,
and then
how exciting.
I also have a Valentine's book that'll be out around Valentine's Day. And it's called Dog Park Sweethearts. And it's another really sweet, sweet book. So yeah, lots going on.
Wow. And so how many books will that put for you in like a year? So that'll be what, 5 books, 6 books in a year?
Yes. 6, I think. Yes.
Wow.
Yes. It's been, because last year I only had 2. So it does seem to be that way. I mean, you have time to actually write them. So some of these have been, you know, written for a while and they're just now coming out. But yeah, it's awesome when it's boom, boom, boom like this. At the same time, you want to make sure each book gets its own attention. So hopefully readers will find them and love them, because I've had so much fun, you know, visiting, if you will, these different characters and their families. So good stuff.
So how many, you've got over 20, but how many books have you written? Like this time next year, how many books will be out of yours?
Honestly, I don't know. I think we're pushing 30 now, but I haven't counted. And I should count.
Okay.
I should know that. But I think we're getting, I think we're getting there. Now I have, you know, there'll be 2 more of the King's books that come out in the next year or so. And then I have a whole new series that I don't even have a release date for it, but it's basically about retired military dogs and them finding their forever home. And of course, you know, the men and women that fall in love over those retired military dogs. And so that'll be coming out probably the year after. So lots of good stuff on the horizon. I'm feeling very blessed as an author that people are giving me a chance. So hopefully readers will love it. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited. I mean, that's just, a lot. I mean,
it is,
you know, you're working full time and you've got your routine.
Yes.
And I think that it's important to note that when your kids were younger, because your youngest is in high school, when your
17.
Kids were younger, you were not able to write this quickly.
No,
correct?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Right.
Yeah. It's only been within the last 5 years that I've been in a position where I could really dedicate a lot of time. And it's because most of them at that point were self-sufficient. And I think you either have to have a nanny or just realize that, you know, it's going to be challenging for you to write full time when you have kids or a lot of kids, which we both have, underfoot. And, you know, that's the way it's supposed to be, though. You're supposed to give them your attention because, you know, they're your kids. And the books,
right.
You know, they'll be there. They'll be there. They're not going anywhere. So, yeah, kind of important. Right.
Yeah. It probably is. Yeah, no, it is.
Yeah.
So you've got all this stuff coming up, mm-hmm. I should have asked you this a while back, but what was the catalyst that made you want to write in the first place?
Well, I was kind of going through, I think we all get there, when we stop having kids and we're like, okay, what am I going to do next? And I have this kind of story. I've always told stories in my mind made little kind of scribble short synopsis all over the place, but I've never actually sat down and tried to write some chapters. And I had these characters that were pretty loud in my head, and I was like, I'll just try. And I wrote it really quickly and loved it. And it's my first book ever, Hollywood Ever After. And as soon as I was halfway through that book, I got struck with another book. And it seems like as soon as I started, it was almost this compulsion. I can't seem to stop, even when I'm on like a break and I'm not supposed to be, or I've just finished a book and I'm, you know, I know I need to clear my head out. They're already there. The stories are there to keep going. So I feel like, as long as they're coming, then I have to write them, right? So,
right.
Definitely.
So tell me who is on your to be read part.
Oh my gosh, I have a huge right here. I am currently reading Brenda Jackson's Forget Me Not. I also have The Key to Happily Ever After by Tiff Marcello, I think, or Marcello. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. I also have Maria Vale's Forever Wolf, which has been epic so far. I'm super excited about that one.
Okay.
And then I have, what is it? Oh, A Father for Her Child by Laurel Greer. So I've got lots of different books going on because, you know, why not? I just have one. Oh, and I just finished Jodi Thomas's The Little Tea Shop on Main, and that was just, she's just amazing. If I could ever be someone when I grow up, it would probably be Jodi Thomas, because she's just, not only is she a talented author, but she's the kind of woman that opens her heart and encourages young authors, and just, there's not a phony bone in her body. She's just amazing. So, yeah, She's who I aspire to be when I grow up.
One of the things that really impressed me about her when I was first finding out about her, and we were lucky enough to see her, we've seen her in person multiple times, but she was lecturing. And I remember somebody saying that the day she was inducted into the Romance Writers Hall of Fame, she bought 300 books, I'm sorry, not 300 books, $300 worth of books on the craft of writing, because her attitude was, you never stop learning.
Yep.
You know, sometimes you just go back to the basics.
Yeah. And if anybody out there that is listening is, you know, wanting to become an author, I would definitely say go out and look and see where she's going to teach a class, because she just has this way of, it's like you're having a conversation with her, which is such a wonderful gift, you know, to have that kind of rapport with people. And it's well worth her time or your time to go and listen to her. She's just phenomenal. And she's on a book tour right now, actually.
Right. And then if people have the opportunity, she also is involved with the West Texas Writers.
Yes. Now, I talked to her. Okay. I talked to her day before yesterday. She may not actually be there this year. She might be going on a family vacation, which, I mean, can't argue with that. But yes, she was kind of one of the people that started it up. And it's a fantastic week-long, completely immersive. There's several different lectures that teach a class. And for new and advanced, every skill level, there's something for everybody, basically. And it's, you're in a place that is isolated enough that you really are focused, that you're in a community of people that are like-minded. So it automatically just kind of boosts your creativity and your enthusiasm. And it's a really fantastic opportunity. If you're ever needing to get away and write, I highly recommend it.
And that's in June, usually, like the first week or second week of June?
Yes, the first week. Okay. I believe it's like the 8th or 9th for that week. Yeah, it's a full week.
Okay. And it's the West Texas Writers Academy? Is that what
it is? Yes, it sure is. And I will actually be teaching there this summer, so I'm excited.
Yay!
So, yes.
That is
I will
exciting.
Be doing my storyboarding and story Bibles and basically what we were talking about, how to make your book come to life. Either before or while you're writing, to keep you energized and focused. So yeah, I'm excited. It's a great environment, and I love working with authors and brainstorming and plotting and getting excited with them. It's just, you know, makes you excited. So it's a good thing.
I think one of the best things, you know, we have about 2 minutes left, but I mean, I think one of the best things about going to a conference, because I think sometimes people wonder if it's worth it. And I think it is, if you can get some really good, a cross-section of presentations. But one of the big things is the brainstorming sessions. And it's not the ones that you assume are going to happen at a class. It's the ones that happen because you're just sitting next to someone at the coffee shop.
Yes.
You know, that kind of thing. Those kind of crazy moments of, you know, and I'm actually doing the show sitting in front of my kids' dance studio. And it's pouring down rain. So that's why it sounds like, Armageddon has happened. You know, yay for rain. It's like pouring. So, thank you so much for being on the show today. And I'm super excited about your new project.
Thank you for having me, Patricia.
Yay. Of course. And so if you're looking for Sasha's stuff, you can look for her online at Sasha Summers. .com, her links to her website, her Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest and all that stuff, and Amazon Books and everything is in the link up to the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.